Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
This is episode 287. This week, we've got a great program. I've got illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison, who stopped by to bring us another great segment of the Masonic Minute. And we're going to go a little bit back to basics this week with a few great papers that we have. I had every intention of having a worshipful Brother John Ruark on to talk about astronomy / astrology together with Frater O. We had a little bit of a scheduling conflict, and so we're going to try to get that episode done as soon as possible, but I don't know exactly when that's going to happen. In addition, I was also unsuccessful in scheduling the next 10 for 10 Worshipful Master, but it is scheduled to have that interview done next week, so I hope to have that next week. And we've got Brother Stephen Higdon, who is a sitting Worshipful Master, who will be on the program. In the news this week, just to let everybody know, we did go ahead and publish a little bit of an agenda, and we've had some change to the agenda as well for the 300 Freemasonry's Legacy, Freemasonry's Future. Now, I do want to say that across the land, now that the date is really creeping up here, we've got a bunch of Grand Lodges now doing something, but the issue, I guess, is that there's a lot to be done, and you can do something very cool to celebrate, but largely these things that are happening are not to the caliber of what myself and a lot of other gentlemen have dreamed of. And so we started planning a big 300 party last year, almost a year and a half ago, actually. So basically what we have is 300 Freemasonry's Legacy, Freemasonry's Future, and what we're doing is we are having the biggest, coolest Masonic conference ever to celebrate 300 years of the United Grand Lodge of England. Our hats off to them, but also because they chartered so many of our lodges that it really is a bit of us as well. If you're interested, let me say June 23rd is the first day that it's happening, and so that's a Friday. We have early arrivals and registration, so beginning at noon we'll have some early registration, early vendor access, and a walkabout. That's kind of, you know, just walking around DC. And those two last things, the early vendor access and the walkabout, will be, we're going to have to play it by ear. Toward the evening, we'll have pizza, some fellowship, and some Facebook Live videos and such. So we might do some quick little video snippets on Facebook Live with some of the brothers there, and we can talk about some cool things live on Facebook with the TMR audience. June 24th, Saturday, at the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. We rented out the George Washington Masonic National Memorial. It's a big deal. The costs that go into this are not small, but we wanted to make sure we did this and did it right. So we've had a little change to the agenda just in the last couple days. We've got the welcome and short introductions. Now, when I say short introductions, we mean it. So we're talking about 20 minutes or less. We've got a brief history of the United Grand Lodge of England by Brother Mike Hambrick, who will be presenting that. We've got A Craftsman's Journey, a brand new, really cool presentation by Brother Stephen L. Harrison, 33rd. Then we're going to do a lunch. So there'll be a catered and a non-catered option, most likely. We're going to have a breakout discussion, part one, which we're going to pool some topics. We'll split into groups, discuss our findings. We'll go into a break. Then we'll come back and we'll do more breakout discussions, part two, and do the same thing. And then we're going to go and we're going to do Masonic trivia. So we'll have various topics split into groups, and we'll have some pretty big prizes. And then here comes the schedule change. So whereas before we were going to do a live taping of TMR, we figured we would split that into those little bite-sized Facebook Live videos that we can do on Friday night. And really get the value out of this that we really wanted, right? So instead of a live taping of TMR, we're going to do a third breakout discussion. So we're going to get even more answers and even more collaboration between brothers and come away with even more value. And then at the end, we're going to start off with a cocktail hour. Then we're going to go into a festive board with Brother Mark Tabbert. We'll have a meal and some closing remarks by TMR. And then that's all going to come to an end relatively quick, right? So after the festive board, then that's going to be like probably 7-8 o'clock when this is over. on a Saturday night. So we've got Afterglow, right? So we'll have more cocktails, more discussion, and further fellowship. We've been planning for, like I said, over a year, and we're all really looking forward to spending time with brothers from around the country who want to have these breakout discussions, who want to have the fellowship and to amalgamate ideas and come up with solutions to a lot of our questions about the craft and how we can make it better, more sustainable, and just, again, all around better. So we have frequently asked questions up. Will there be hotels to stay at a discounted rate? Yes. So we're going to be posting the details very soon on that. We've worked out a deal with two hotels in the area, both about an 11-minute walk from the George Washington Masonic Memorial. So it'll be very close. There will be tons of vendors, and we'll have a list forthcoming. If you want to be a vendor at this event, shoot an email over to themasonicroundtable@gmail.com. Can you bring your friend, your wife, your spouse, partner? Since this is not a tiled event, they can come, but there's not going to be other programs running for them if they're not into it. Keep that in mind. And also, all guests who do attend need to have a ticket. And what will be the attire for the event? So this is a question we've received lots of, and we talked about it, and I think it's pretty standard, right? So business casual for the majority of the day, coat and tie for dinner on Saturday night. So again, if you would like to participate in this, head on over to themasonicroundtable.com/300 or wcypodcast.com and just click on the link for the 300 event right there in the navigation bar. Other news. So no other real news other than the other day I finally picked up my latest edition of The Northern Light. The Northern Light is the Scottish Rite magazine for the Northern jurisdiction of Freemasonry. The direction of the Northern jurisdiction v. Southern jurisdiction is very different, right? And I'm okay with that. You know, they're two different things. But much of the time, I have pretty much made peace with the fact that the Northern jurisdiction doesn't really value the symbolism or the esoteric nature of the degrees. And in this last issue I picked up that I just had sitting in my bag forever, I started flipping through the pages and I came across this article, and it blew my mind because I thought, how in the world did I not pick this up right away and see this article? We're going to read that on the show. We'll make sure that we provide that issue in the app extras, and we'll make sure we provide some links back to the Northern Jurisdiction's website so that you can get in contact with them and perhaps get any information out of the Scottish Rite that you need. With that, let's get right into this great paper. Now again, before I begin this paper, I want to let everybody know that the Northern Masonic jurisdiction is only 15 states. So by reading this, I hope that some of the Southern jurisdiction states that and brothers might hear this and go, holy cow, maybe a step in the right direction here, or just a taste of maybe this is just one brother. I don't know. But the article is called The Truth About Masonic Secrecy, and it's by Jeffrey L. Kuntz, 32nd Degree. And again, a fantastic article, so let's check it out. Oh, and before we begin, keep an ear out for some quotes for some authors that I have talked about in the past as some of my favorites, and that says something. Anyway, The Truth About Masonic Secrecy, Jeffrey L. Kuntz, 32nd Degree. Freemasonry and the secrecy associated with it have been a disputed topic for centuries. The matter of Masonic secrecy has, in fact, been too often misunderstood and misrepresented, even by many of its members. These fallacies have been the cause of much of the suspicion and criticism leveled at the fraternity throughout much of its history. Perhaps one of the most misconstrued and misused statements occasionally uttered by members in more recent times concerning Masonic culture is, quote, "There are no secrets," end quote. This seems, to some at least, to be about as tepid a statement by those attempting to make an apologia for the order as Masonry, quote, "makes good men better." As true as that may be, but the formal avowal is not even really true. This is one of those things showing the lack of knowledge of Masonic history and principles, even among some leaders within the membership. Joshua Gunn, 32nd Degree, a professor of communications studies and author of works on the occult and the article in the 2007 edition of Haredom, Volume 15, the official publication of the Scottish Rite Research Society, stated, quote, "Downplaying the secrecy of Masonic practice and ritual may be more detrimental to our fraternity than many realize," end quote. Naturally, as in all fraternities, business meetings and degree work of the various Masonic bodies are open only to fully initiated members. But is Freemasonry what is called a quote-unquote secret society? The term often conveys a rather adverse connotation. Reference books describe a secret society as performing some of the same practices as does Freemasonry. Rituals, including secret initiations, oaths, signs of recognition, inculcation of the order's mysteries, often by use of symbolism. It seems the problem defining it has to do with the purpose of such an association. Some were organized for criminal activities, whereas Freemasonry was created for such worthy causes as the advancement of universal brotherhood and charitable activities, as well as the inculcation of its teachings and philosophy. Freemasonry, secrecy, and the quote-unquote New World Order have occasionally been a somewhat juicy topic of debate in recent decades. There are those who believe the establishment of this quote-unquote New World Order, which is said to be the plot by a small authoritarian group of leaders planning to obtain control over the Western world, is a major agenda item of Freemasons. This notion, or conspiracy theory, if you will, is prompted, in part, by the fact that the Latin phrase Novus Ordo Seclorum is imprinted on the reverse side of the Great Seal of the United States, which is, in turn, imprinted on the reverse side of the U.S. $1 bill. It is arched under the pyramid, which is capped by the all-seeing eye encased within an equilateral triangle, symbols associated with Freemasonry. The Great Seal of the United States first appeared on the dollar bill in 1935 under President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was a Freemason. The Great Seal was, of course, designed during the few years immediately following the Declaration of Independence by several early American leaders, including Benjamin Franklin, a devoted Freemason. These things help to contribute to the suspicion of those misinformed souls who think the Order is involved with such a sinister scheme. If there were such an elite coterie, with such a world-changing plan, they would have to be frighteningly powerful indeed. The problem for the critics regarding that Latin phrase is that it actually translates as a new order of the ages, meaning the establishment of a new independent nation state of the United States of America by the founding fathers. By the way, the other Latin phrase, Annuit Coeptis, which is arched over the triangle, is translated, He, God, has favored our undertakings. Both these phrases are taken from Virgil's Eclogues. The William Morgan Affair of the 1820s caused certainly one of the biggest furors involving Masonic secrets in the history of the fraternity. Freemasonry was decimated. As a result, in fact, a new political party, the Anti-Masonic Party, was formed. There were those who even called the order the Antichrist. The affair occurred nearly two centuries ago and has perhaps been adequately covered, but for the purpose of discussing Masonic secrecy, it is important to rehash here. In 1826 in Batavia, New York, William Morgan mysteriously disappeared after threatening to publicize Masonic secrets, initiatory rites in particular, after being rejected, it is said, from membership in a Royal Arch body. Suspicions were that he was kidnapped and murdered because of his threats, although nothing was proven one way or the other, despite the fact that extensive investigations were made into the affair. Morgan lived in Canada for a time and may or may not have been a member of the fraternity up there, but there is no evidence of his ever having been a member of a lodge in the United States. It is believed, however, that he made money as an itinerant lecturer on Masonry when back in the States. Morgan was thought of by many as being a rather shady character, heavy drinker, deadbeat, having intermittently spent time in jail, and made enemies easily, certainly possessing character flaws quite unbecoming of a Mason. It certainly is not beyond the realm of possibility that his disappearance and alleged murder were perpetrated by individuals having no connection at all to Freemasonry. Today, such actions taken against someone making the threats that Morgan made would appear to be way beyond the pale, indeed, considering the seemingly widespread lack of earnestness among members toward the fraternity, especially the ideological and philosophical aspects of it. It should be pointed out here, too, that there has been an abundance of other exposés of Masonic rituals throughout much of the fraternity's history, all without incident, as far as it is known. Very shortly after the founding of the Grand Lodge of England in 1717, in both Great Britain and France, as well as in America, a number of exposés were printed, some of which were distributed in the form of tracts. Even during the last several decades, publications have come out harshly disparaging the order, including some written by former candidates who withdrew from the initiatory process after being appalled by the symbolic penalties of the oaths. The oaths and other esoterically abstruse parts of the rituals point to one of the reasons for the secrecy. Unfortunately, of course, there was, is, and always will be that perennial liability of a prospective candidate getting in the door who should not be in to begin with, as such individuals could be inclined to bring open condemnation, ridicule Freemasonry. The concerns relating to Masonic secrecy addressed here up to this point are really rather secondary. We shall now examine the nitty-gritty of fraternal secrecy, the quote-unquote hows and quote-unquote whys of secrecy. A most important matter of Masonic culture that seems to be discussed not nearly enough is Freemasonry's connection with the ancient mysteries. Upon perusal of just a small cross-section of the plethora of books and articles written about Freemasonry, one would be hard put to deny the relationship of that fraternal organization's relationship to esoteric knowledge. It is mainly due to the abstruse nature of its more sublime teachings that there is so little discourse among the fraternal brethren involving the more mystical and philosophical side of the fraternity. This, of course, is quite understandable. Masonic author George H. Steinmetz, in his enlightening book Freemasonry, Its Hidden Meaning, quoted another well-known Masonic scholar, J.D. Buck, quote, "It is in the ancient symbols of Freemasonry that its real secrets lie concealed, and these are as densely veiled to the Mason as to any other, unless he has studied the science of symbolism in general, and Masonic symbols in particular." End quote. Steinmetz then drops an even more striking J.D. Buck bombshell with the quote, "The most profound secrets of Freemasonry are not revealed in the lodge at all. They belong to the few." End quote. It would perhaps be remiss not to also make this point from a biblical aspect. After being asked by his disciples why he spoke to the multitudes in parables, Jesus replied, quote, "Because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given," end quote. Matthew 13:10. Perhaps our next question, then, should be just exactly what are the ancient mysteries, if we would even dare to ask. Despite the hundreds of books on the philosophical teachings, as well as the history of Freemasonry, many of which are very well written and highly informative, it took a book of fiction by a non-Mason to answer that question to any really significant wide-ranging effect. Dan Brown, in his blockbuster novel, The Lost Symbol, has probably revealed more about the so-called ancient mysteries and the kinship of Freemasonry to them than any nonfiction book about the fraternity. When Brown's greatly anticipated book first came out in 2009, Random House initially printed 6.5 million copies. By 2014, there were over 30 million copies worldwide. People like a good yarn, and Brown is a master of suspense. If that is what it takes to make the truth known and for readers to really pay attention, then so be it. Yes, it is a book of fiction, and it contains some far-fetched episodes in order to sensationalize the story, but Brown did amazingly extensive research on the interrelationship between the ancient mysteries, Freemasonry, and the Holy Bible. In chapter 130 of The Lost Symbol, Brown wrote, "For America's Masonic forefathers, the word has been the Bible, and yet few people in history have understood its true message. This chapter is just a little over one page long, but one should read all of it, for it contains a treasure trove of wisdom and truth." One of the phrases Brown uses in The Lost Symbol that would make a serious student of mysticism sit up and take notice is, "As above, so below." Until then, this axiom was almost entirely unknown in the exoteric outside world. It appears to paraphrase what some theologians call the third petition of the Lord's Prayer, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." To the mystic, the Christian mystic in particular, what both phrases basically mean is that God's spiritual power is around us and within us, as it is throughout the infinite universe. Another possible way to express it would be to say that God's invisible, omnipotent, and omnipresent spiritual energy is among us in this vulnerably material world. An even more engaging subject broached in The Lost Symbol is that of noetics, a word deriving from the Greek word nous, meaning knowing, or inner knowing. There is actually an organization called the Institute of Noetic Sciences, located in Petaluma, California, which deals with the study of the ability of the human mind to tap into the powers that permeates our being as it permeates the infinite universe. In another narrational passage of the story, Brown explains, quote, "The mind's ability to affect the physical world could be augmented through practice. Intention was a learned skill. Like meditation, harnessing the true power of thought required practice. More important, some people were born more skilled at it than others, and throughout history, there had been those few who had become true masters. Savants of mysticism and the occult believe that there have been civilizations in the distant past that have had a much greater knowledge of the powers of the mind, such as the ancient Egyptians, Jewish Essenes, Chinese, and even some Native American cultures as the Hopi and Mayan groups. This could account for their seeming advanced knowledgement of certain sciences such as astronomy. By the way, amazingly enough, some symbols very similar to Masonic ones have been found on ancient stone structures of these ancient peoples. Modern occult students also believe some ancient adepts of psychic powers misused these forces for evil purposes, and that is what led to the establishment of a secret initiatory system in order to prevent these abuses from getting into the wrong hands. Secret signs, passwords, and grips were also created somewhere along the line. Quote, "The more profound secrets of nature, science, and art were not to be entrusted to the masses," end quote, explained Dr. H. Spencer Lewis in his book, The Complete History of the Rosicrucian Order. In 1958, the science fiction movie The Fly, starring Vincent Price, the character he portrayed, ended the tragic story by saying, quote, "The search for the truth is the most dangerous work in the world." On a lighter note, there is the story of a lady along a parade route jokingly yelling out to the marching commandery of Knights Templar, "Where is the Holy Grail?" One of the Sir Knights retorted, "We could tell you, but we'd have to kill you." Back to the more serious side, there is a supposedly true story of a student of esoteric knowledge who attempted to approach a certain area in the Yucatan Peninsula containing the Mayan ruins, being persuaded to turn back in a manner in which he felt physically threatened. There are various records, recorded accounts of similar but perhaps more polite occurrences taking place in the foothills of Mount Shasta in Northern California, where also, very strange lights have been seen where no electric power is available. There have been scholars who have suspected that vestiges of certain natives possessing advanced knowledge in certain areas of America have existed in the not-too-distant past who had preserved their ancient customs and secret colonies. Freemasonry actually did exist prior to the founding of the Grand Lodge of England in 1717, and during that last half of the 16th century and first half of the 17th, there were a number of mystical and scientific philosophers who are considered to have had a strong influence on the development of Freemasonry as we know it, such men as Elias Ashmole, Robert Murray, John Dee, and Francis Bacon, who was deeply involved with the Rosicrucians and who was the author of The New Atlantis. It appears there is a strong likelihood that these men were among the first of those who planned to establish a mystical fraternal organization that would have a wide appeal among the populace, i.e., a watered-down version of the ancient mystery schools. After long and serious examinations and discussions of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol as well as certain non-fiction books by Masonic authors, it would seem a gross injustice not to conclude that Freemasonry has some connection, as vague and indirect as it may be, with mental and spiritual development, and is not just another social club. At the same time, all Masons, even those who have received most or all Masonic degrees, could possibly agree that there is nothing in any of the degrees that would be too dangerous to reveal to the general public. In conclusion, we shall make what may seem like somewhat of a deviation from our topic of Masonic secrecy, but really is not, by stating another J.D. Buck quote that Steinmetz used that is perhaps even more relevant today than when it was stated over 100 years ago. Quote, "There was never a greater need, never so great an opportunity as now for Masonry to assume its true place. If the majority of Masons do not realize the true significance and value of their possessions, there is all the more need for those who do not speak out in the face of discouragement and distraction and do their utmost to demonstrate the truth." End quote. All right, I hope you enjoyed that piece. Again, just a diamond in the rough as it comes to an esotericist's view of certain publications that are Masonic, that just stood out and it wowed me. Couldn't believe I was seeing it there. Again, kudos to the Northern Light for publication of that. It was great. Thank you. Next, we're going to go right into the Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, and we'll come right back with another gripping piece.
You were a Demolay, so why didn't you join the Masons? Have you ever asked that question? Have you ever wondered why a young man, if he enjoyed Demolay and got something out of it, wouldn't just jump right into Freemasonry? The answer may be as varied as the number of Demolays who don't join. But to generalize, to really generalize, I may be uniquely qualified to answer that question. I wasn't just a Demolay. I was a super Demolay. I was my chapter's first representative Demolay, first Chevalier, held all the offices, published the newsletter, and had so many merit bars, I practically tripped over them when I walked. Then one day, I turned 21 and poof, I wasn't a Demolay. And for the next 30 years or so, I never gave Freemasonry a single thought. What happened? And during that time, were my experiences similar to others who didn't join? When I turned 21, I was in college. I had not visited my chapter for at least a couple years. Demolay not only wasn't on the top of my list of priorities, it was, in fact, not on the list at all. I had new friends, new activities, and, those pesky courses I had to take. I had gone from being super Demolay to one of those dreaded members in name only. Demolay became a distant memory, and along with it, any thought of the Freemasons. Of course, not everyone goes to college. At that age, some go into the military, and others just get busy starting careers and families. So when I got out of college, I joined the ranks of those who were getting started in their careers and life in general. Getting started is tough. You're a big boy now, and you don't have time to sit back in your rocker and reminisce about those halcyon days in Demolay. It may be anecdotal, but of the guys I knew in Demolay, far more of them who did not go to college or attended a local university became Masons. There are other factors, to be sure. A 21-year-old young man just may not have a lot in common with older and more experienced adults. There might even be an intimidation factor to consider. And back then, to be one, ask one was the rule of law. Today, in my jurisdiction, you can ask. Had my father asked me to join the Masons, likely as not, I would have. Another thing, in my jurisdiction, an 18-year-old can now become a Freemason. With proper mentoring, this is a good thing. It provides a transitional period before all those life events start inundating him. I must say, though, it still throws me for a loop when I meet the state master counselor who proudly announces he's a 32nd degree Mason. Back in the day, Sonny, that didn't happen. Going to college, going into the military, getting a career started are tough distractions. You get out of the habit of doing something, even something meaningful, and it's hard to get back to it. And on a personal level, that is the main reason I didn't join. In a way, I just forgot how great it was. I might add, that also applies to our brothers we don't see anymore. They lose their enthusiasm for coming to boring meetings, get distracted by other things, and before you know it, join the ranks of those dreaded members in name only. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, it seems, does not apply to Freemasonry. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, many thanks to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. If you get a chance, I would really encourage you to go see him. He's doing a few talks that are coming up. He's going to do a newer talk, the one that we're having him do at the 300 event called The Craftsman's Journey. So Monday, April 3rd, 6:30 p.m. at Notaway Lodge 470 in Maryville, Missouri. He's going to be there. Let's go check that out. Thursday, April 20th at 6 p.m., Hancock Lodge 311 in Leavenworth, Kansas. He'll be there. And if you get a chance, one of the most fascinating presentations I've seen him do is Freemasonry and Oak Island. So if you want to catch that one, you want to go check it out. It's going to be in just a couple days here, March 22nd at 6 p.m. at Liberty Lodge 31 in Liberty, Missouri. So again, if you can check those out, please do. It's fantastic. It's worth the drive wherever you are. Trust me. Next, our friends over at the Southern California Research Lodge, their magazine, Fraternal Review. And this comes from the February 2016 issue entitled The Masonic Apron, What Is It Truly Protecting? So this particular one covers a lot of interesting points about the Masonic apron. And on the inside cover, you flip one extra page. If you hear that, it's me holding the magazine. Under the title Moral Compass is a paper. It's very short. It's called The Esoteric Significance of the White Lambskin Apron. It's by Gregory H. Peters. Now, this is, again, this is legalities. I need to mention this is an excerpt from The Esoteric Significance of the White Lambskin Apron by Brother Gregory H. Peters in Petrie Stone's Review of Freemasonry. And the web address, http://www.freemasons-freemasonry.com/entered_apprentice_apron.html. And this was accessed on December 14th, 2015. So here we go. Esoteric Significance of the White Lambskin Apron by Gregory H. Peters. We can glean some level of insight by looking at the presentation of the apron from the ritual of the Entered Apprentice. The monitorial lecture informs us that, quote, the lambskin or white leather apron is an emblem of innocence and the badge of a Mason, more ancient than the golden fleece or the Roman eagle, more honorable than the star and garter, or any other order that can be conferred upon you at this or any future period by king, prince, potentate, or any other person, which it is hoped that you will wear with pleasure to yourself and honor to the fraternity. End quote. Furthermore, the monitorial lecture of the second section adds on the badge of a Mason, quote, the lamb has in all ages been deemed an emblem of innocence. He, therefore, who wears the lambskin as a badge of Masonry is thereby continually reminded of the purity of life and conduct which is essentially necessary to his gaining admission into the celestial lodge above where the supreme architect of the universe presides, end quote. As with all the symbols of Masonry, our emblems are richly variegated, and what may appear as a straightforward explanation may oftentimes contain deeper layers of meaning and symbolism as one contemplates the symbols. While the surface interpretations of our symbols teach moral lesson, one may open up to deeper layers of interpretation by contemplation of those symbols, each layer building upon the previous one. The first layer of instruction within the white leather apron is that of the moral teaching implicit in the craft degrees. It is clear that the emblematic device, the craft, represents innocence, honor, and purity of life, which is necessary for admission into the quote-unquote celestial lodge. Masonry instructs us that it is a quote-unquote system of morality veiled in allegory and illustrated by symbols. It has further been defined by Albert Mackey in the symbolism of Freemasonry as a, quote, science which is engaged in the search after the divine truth, end quote. Both of these may be seen as a indicator for the ethical structure of Masonry, but a simple layer of interpretation of the white apron indicates that its placement at the waist to purify the sexual instinct of man, which, if left unchecked, has more often than not resulted in errors of thought, word, and deed. Thus, purity alluded to with the color and placement of the apron has a practical ethical instruction. There you have it. Just a little brief excerpt from that. If you'd like more, please visit the web address that we quoted. I'll also have that in the show notes. That's it for this week. I thank you very much for coming along on the educational journey that is this program. And it is made possible by you, the listener. We are listener-supported Masonic education. So how do you become a supporter? How do you become a producer of this program? Very simply, by going to wcypodcast.com and clicking on the Support the Show tab. And you can either buy a pin, you can do some shopping, or you can make a direct donation to the show. Any one of those things, all the money that we raise goes right back into the production of this show. We do have a great lapel pin that was painstakingly designed by both Brother Jason Richards and Brother Juan Sepulveda, and this is not something that is available anywhere else, so you can only get it here. This is not something that you'll find in the little plastic square bins at the Grand Lodge sessions. You're not going to see, 100 of these just sitting in a thing and guys selling them for $2. It's just never going to happen. We own this. This is ours, and this is to produce this program. And when you wear this, you're telling people, hey, I produce Masonic education. What do I produce? Go check out the website. We produce this program. And that's largely what this is. It's by you, for you, and it's fantastic. And I can't thank you enough for allowing me to bring you this program. The pin itself has a great design. If you go over there and you click on our links, there's a full rundown of all the symbolism in the pin. It's full of it. It's just packed. But one of the greatest things about it is it just says, whence came you? It doesn't say the show. It doesn't say WCY podcast, nothing like that. So when you wear this, it's simply a Masonic pin, and it's a triangle, so not just your normal round button pin. So please do check that out. In addition, we've got cufflinks to match, as well as money clips, and we've got some tie bars. So again, check those out. We ship anywhere in the United States for $2, and we used to ship anywhere in the world for $2, but it was becoming a little bit much having to ship a $10 pin, and we'd have to ship it for $15. No matter where it was in Europe or wherever, it was like between $13 to $15 to ship a pin. So we would actually lose donation money for a while. So we needed to change that, so we will ship anywhere else in the world for $15. If you are in Canada, please just choose domestic shipping in the US and we'll take care of that. If it doesn't allow you to do that, shoot me a message and we will definitely refund a portion of your shipping costs. I am not about to price gouge on shipping. The other thing is we have where to shop. We've got some exclusive agreements with a few cool retailers who have agreed that if we put up their links, they will send us a little bit of the purchase back to support this show. So one of them is something I'm really proud of, which is buybankersbest.com. That is owned by Brother Levi Banker, who has worked with me to create a couple exclusive products, King Solomon's Beard Oil and Beard Balm. Check those out. 20% comes back to the show if you use the promo code BBWCY357. Check that out, please. In addition, we've got the new Alpha Brain Instant and regular Alpha Brain, so you can check those out. Click through our links, use promo code WCY, you'll get 10% off. It's amazing stuff. I use it almost every day. You can read all about it right there on our site. And if you don't like what that says, they've got plenty of documentation on their own site as well. But please do go to wcypodcast.com and click through our links. That way they know who sent you their way. And last but not least, we do have the make a direct donation. So by doing that, you're just sending a direct donation to the show. Some guys like to do a monthly donation and they set that up. And without those, this show might not be here. We have some generous contributors to this program each month. And for that, I really can't thank you enough. You guys are the heart and soul of the production. On behalf of myself and the WCY team, Frauder O, Adam Thayer, Steve Harrison, Matt Dobrow, and Bill Hosler, we all work hard to bring this to you, and we try to get this show out, and it just means the world that you guys help us out like that. So thank you very much. We try to give back whenever we can, so we do have a little section called From Us to You. The top link there is the remastered Manly P. Hall lectures. So if you like Manly P. Hall and you want to listen to his lectures, but you just can't get past all that crazy white noise that was in all of the YouTube videos, we actually remastered them. I did all the work, and Gerald Brown got me all the lectures. So basically, totally remastered audio, 320 kilobytes stereo, dual channel. It's awesome. And those are just available. There's a link right there to the Google Drive, and they're yours for free. Just us giving it back, right? And of course, our friends, the Midnight Freemasons, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, We publish new content, great Masonic articles. Please check that out. And if you like Masonic podcasts, check out the Masonic Roundtable. We go live every Tuesday at 10, 9 Central. And of course, those are the fellows that we are bringing you the 300 years of Freemasonry celebration for the UGLE. It's going to be amazing. So again, check out all that stuff. We've got a lot of resources for you on wcypodcast.com. And with that, we're going to end the show for this week. We'll be back next week with a guest, most likely. So until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.